What's up? You are listening to Gnome City. This is CGSF 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Katie, and I am joined by Bianca. Hello, Bianca.
Hi, Katie.
Hi. Wait. Talk again.
Hello.
Oh, wait. Point the mic towards your face.
Hello.
Yeah, like...
ASMR.
Oh, my gosh. It's beautiful. Okay. So, yeah, we are broadcasting from the SFU Burnaby campus, which is on the unceded Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Kwikwetlem, and Musqueam Nations. And for today on Gnome City, it's going to be, like, a very special event. We're doing... So today, me and Bianca, we are two smart ladies. And what we did is we both separately researched something that we were curious about. And now we're going to teach it to each other and to all of you. I guess we can just introduce what we both did right now so people know what's up. But, and that song we were just playing, gotta say that too, but that was Swimmers by Broken Social Scene. And it's Swimmers, because for mine, we're going to be swimming down deep into the ocean, figuring out how do animals live down there. And also, I found out about, like... something really disgusting deep down there, and I'll tell you about it. And then, Bianca, what are you going to teach us about?
I'm going to be teaching us about psychosis in the brain and how our perceptions of life deeply change when we're under this effect, and how sometimes we might not even know that it happens.
Yeah, wow. I'm so excited to learn about that. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So I'm going to go first about the deep ocean. So first, I feel like I want to tell you about how do animals even live down there, and then we'll talk about the weird animals. But so when you're under the ocean, the biggest thing you have to deal with is that, like, you're being crushed by all the pressure. And, like, there's animals that can live, like, 8 kilometers under the sea. And down there, it's, like, the same amount of pressure as if, like, a T-Rex was, like, chomping down on you. And so you need to have cells that are, like, really, really strong. So, like, in their cells, they have these, like, fatty membranes called, like, plasmalogens, and they, like, are able to curve under the pressure and so that they don't just collapse, and then they can survive, and they're pretty awesome. And we also have those, but in our brains.
So only our brains would survive if we were to go underwater?
Maybe. I don't even know if our brains would survive, but we would, like, be crushed.
Yeah, they definitely would.
Yeah, and if you brought something from underwater, like, deep down up to here, like, it would just melt.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so, just something that I found out about that was really exciting is that deep underwater, so there's mountains underwater, as we know, because it's, like, the tectonic plates move around, and there's, like, magma comes up, and it makes little landforms. And so there's these, like, there's these, like, ridges underwater that are around, like, 2 kilometers down. And here we have these hydrothermal heat vents. And so here it's, like the cold water is able to, like, carve through the Earth's crust. And then the heat from the magma, like, it comes up. And so these little areas are, like, 400 degrees Celsius. Like, they're super, super hot. And there's these things that live there, too. And... one of the crazy things I learned about that lives there is giant tube worms. And these guys, they're 2 meters long, and they have gills that are, like, 1 foot long, and they're, like, retractable.
Okay.
Yeah, and their gills are, like, beautiful. They're, like, these bright red, and they, like, look like feathers. And they, like, so they go out to, like, to get the oxygen from the water. And then, like, if a predator comes by, like a vent crab, then it will, like, shoot back in. Aww. To the tube.
That's kind of cute.
I know. And they live in colonies of, like, thousands.
Okay.
Cool. And they all, like, hang out together. And they also don't have stomachs. They just have, like, this bacteria in their bodies. And it, like, and it takes the chemicals from... like, the magma below, and it, like, turns it into energy. And this is, like, a really interesting thing. It's called, like, chemosynthesis.
Okay.
And for me, I was thinking about it, and I was like, whoa, this is, like, aliens must be real then, because these creatures, like, you don't need food to survive, and you don't need sun, and you can, like, make energy from chemicals. I was like, aliens.
Wow. That's like science, but naturally science. It's like natural science, like biology. Like the whole, it's kind of like photosynthesis. It's kind of like the ocean nurtures itself by like the creatures that live within it. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. Oh my God. And with that too, it's like there's creatures that live like inside of the worm colonies, and they use like the worm's bodies as like protection from the chemicals because they can't handle the chemicals, but the worms love the chemicals.
Okay.
And so the worms take all the chemicals, and then everyone else is like just happy to exist in this nice little like hot tub underwater.
That's so cool.
I know, right? And yeah, but then the thing is though, like the magma, like sometimes like things will shift in it and it'll like get cold in that spot, and so the hydrothermal heat vent, like it's not warm anymore, and that's not good because that's like what the tube worms need to survive. And so like the tube worms, like the adults, they all die, but their little babies will like get carried off in the ocean current, and they'll find a new hydrothermal heat vent, and they'll like start a new colony there, and then they rebuild together.
That's so cool.
I know. They all, like, they all work together to live, and I think that's just so impressive. That life just prevails everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like people and creatures were made, were given, like, ways to survive, essentially, like, on their own.
Yeah.
Just, like, their natural ways of life helps them live.
Yeah, just, like, the things they like, it just all... it all works out. And but the thing is though, that's really crazy, is that like you would think that these tube worms would be like really strong because they are like really adaptable because they're able to like live in these extreme conditions, but they can actually like, they're only developed to live in this crazy extreme. So if like the chemicals are slightly wrong, or like the like shape of the earth is slightly wrong, then they can't even survive. So they're like endangered, like they might be endangered by like deep sea mining and stuff.
Oh yeah.
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 So we gotta like protect the tube worms.
Protect the turtles and the tube worms.
Exactly. But yeah, they're like the heaviest worms ever.
Like how big are they? Would like show me.
Well, they're 2 meters, which is also known as like 6'6".
Wow.
So like the tallest person you know.
Are they like thick?
They're actually, like, I feel like they're kind of thin.
Okay.
And the tube part is just, like, white, kind of yellowy. And it's kind of cool. The way they live together is, like, they all kind of, like, lay together. You know, like, there's no personal space.
Nice. Yeah. They're just one big worm.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. And, yeah, their colonies are massive. And you know what's crazy? Is I don't have anything more to say about them. That took me a really long time to learn about, but I don't have any more. That's my knowledge.
That was still a very interesting segment. I still really enjoyed it.
But the thing is, I also have something really special to share, which is the band that I found called the Hydrothermal Vents.
Mm-hmm.
And they're from Montreal, and they like were doing music in 2014.
What kind of music do they make?
Well, I'm going to play it. And okay. It's really like, I don't know. I guess it's like kind of like indie rock. It's like really weird. Some of it's like unlistenable. But they have like a couple dozen, I think, like supporters on Bandcamp. But they're like super niche, and they like, yeah, they're just like a couple of weirdos. But I thought that was so cool that like not only is there a band called the Hydrothermal Vents, but they're Canadian, just like us.
Support your local artists.
Exactly. So this song is called Neptune's Grave, and it also refers to the mid-ocean ridge, which is somewhere where a lot of these worms and hydrothermal vents would be, of course, because it's like the ridges are where like the mountain or like the magma is able to like seep through. So here is Neptune's Grave by the Hydrothermal Vents.
Yeah.
Yo, that was Neptune's Grave by the Hydrothermal Vents. And yeah, we were just talking about the giant tube worms in the hydrothermal vents at the bottom of the ocean. And now we're going to talk about psychosis with Bianca. This is CGSF.
Very random transition. But the topic that I researched is kind of tied to personal experience as well. So basically, psychosis is when you lose your sense of reality and you just cannot tell what is what. Like, it's kind of like hallucinations, but they don't have to be visual. They can also be mental. For me, it kind of manifests as like you see patterns and stuff that have no correlation. Like, you'll see like angel numbers, for example, just like over and over and over, and then you'll think that means something, but it doesn't. And obviously it doesn't. And then you like hear song lyrics, and then they like kind of correlate to your situation that you're in, or like a situation that you can correlate that to, and then you automatically think that, like, oh, this song is talking about this thing. It's like you don't even know that it is. Like, I didn't know that these were symptoms until I was doing research about it, because when people talk about psychosis and other disorders like schizophrenia and stuff, they never talk about the lesser symptoms of it. Not the lesser, but the kind of symptoms that don't really sound that crazy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because like when you were explaining that, I feel like a lot of people do just like genuinely believe in angel numbers.
Yeah, and that's like totally fine. Like, if that counts as spiritual guidance and all, but when you kind of let it like drive you nuts, like, oh my god, that's an angel number, blah blah blah, that means I have to do this, that's psychosis. And another way that I kind of did that was with angel numbers, with tarot cards. Mm-hmm. Like, what I read tarot every now and then, but when I'm like in a really stressful situation, or when I'm like, I absolutely hate uncertainty. Like, as a neurodivergent, I cannot handle uncertainty. That makes me spiral. It makes me go insane. Okay, but like, I would use tarot cards to like let me kind of be delusional, I guess. Like, oh my god, the card said it. Like, I can be delusional about it. But that's also psychosis, because you're relying on something else to kind of shape your sense of reality, which is already based on a false premonition. So mm-hmm. it's all in your head, all this to say.
So when you're reading the tarot cards, is it like you kind of already have your own idea of what you want them to say, and you're like,
yeah,
and it's like confirmation bias?
Yes, it's basically just delusion, honestly. But we can talk about this another time, but I feel like a lot of tarot is kind of interpretation. And there's no one way to interpret a tarot card. And I feel like a lot of the ways that you can interpret a tarot card, it's going to be very obviously biased, because it's you reading it. And if it's for yourself, it's even worse, because that mm-hmm. bias is so bad. But I find that reading for another person, there's a lot less bias. But yeah, we can talk about that another time. I also have BPD, right? Borderline personality disorder. We can also talk about that another time. But a very big trait that comes with that is a thing called splitting, where with BPD, emotions are so intense, right? Like, I experience my emotions like 1,000 times more than the average person does. So when I split, I can go from either very happy to very angry in like 2 seconds. And like, it's like a switch. Like, my mood will just go black and white, essentially. Like, there's only good and bad. There's no medium. Mm. And with psychosis, it's actually very hard to discern when I'm in psychosis and when I'm splitting. With psychosis, for a lot of people, you actually don't know when you're going into psychosis, but sometimes I can recognize signs. But the two main differences that I've noticed between BPD and psychosis is that the delusion from the black and white thinking with BPD, which kind of makes my entire brain, I can just feel like a pain in my body, you know what I mean? Like, it's like an ache in my brain, and my body just feels heavy, and like my energy just doesn't feel good. But with psychosis, it doesn't always manifest as like a negative feeling. Sometimes the delusion will cause you to have a false sense of happiness, which you may not even realize that you're experiencing. And that also can be pretty scary, especially when you don't even know that it's happening.
Wait, what do you mean? Like, you don't know that what's happening?
Yeah, like, I don't really understand if I'm entering psychosis or if I'm, like, normal. You know what I mean?
Right, so you're feeling happy, but you don't know if that's, like, genuine.
Yeah, and it's really scary to, like, you know, not be in control of your emotions or your sense of reality, basically. It's absolutely terrifying. Let's see. So we can also talk about how weed and psychosis plays in, like, how weed fuels psychosis, essentially. I took a look at a couple studies using our school's library. Shout out the local library.
Hell yeah.
And there was no difference between, for specifically neurotypicals, there was no difference between current and former users of cannabis in negative symptom severity. So that kind of just means there was nothing taken away. There were, you know, like psychology, positive and negative symptoms. Negative means to take it away. Mm-hmm. There was no like loss of function, no loss of motor function, no amotivation. But stopping cannabis use has lessened positive symptoms, which is like they add stuff. So like you could get depression, you could get anxiety, you could get psychosis. But stopping usage of that, it draws all those symptoms back for the neurotypical mind. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been a lot of research done for neurodivergent minds on the usage of cannabis, but there is very strong research to suggest that it can have a positive effect, not in the positive symptom effect, but just like a good effect. So the CBD, specifically the cannabinoids in cannabis, they interact with our endocannabinoid systems and they alter our socio-emotional aspects and cognitions. Because we just have, we as in like autistics, just naturally have very intense and very strong socio-emotional aspects and cognition patterns. Like we've got insane pattern recognition, we have very strong emotions and things like that. So the ways that cannabinoids can interact with those systems can chill them out, or essentially it's just to chill them out. And this is a quote from one of the papers. Changes in endocannabinoid system would be present in autistics, that was the hypothesis, whereas the changes in the system would be most present in autistics compared to neurotypicals. Mm. But yeah, not enough research has been actually done, but this is very strong hypothetical research to suggest. So it would be very interesting if a study could be done in the future. It would be very interesting, and it could potentially be quite groundbreaking for, you know, the stigma surrounding weed as in general, because there's a bunch of people all around the world who use it as a coping mechanism, not even just as a coping mechanism, but a tool to like self-medicate. Mm-hmm. So that would be, it would be great for my community and, you know, anyone who feels like they need something to help them, but they don't know what it is. It would be like a good tool. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm like super interested in like finding that line where it's like using weed as something that's helpful versus like using it as like a crutch to support you.
Yeah.
And like when it becomes harmful to use it.
I find that it becomes really harmful when you lose your function. Specifically, I'd argue that negative symptoms are worse than positive symptoms. Because negative symptoms, they take away things from you. They take away your motivation. They take away, like I said before. I find that when it makes you unable to function, I would say that that's the line that we need to draw here. But actually, with neurodivergence, a lot of their experience with weed is that they smoke it and then they go do something. They go about their day. And some people have ended up reporting that they feel like motivation rather than amotivation. Mm. So the positive symptoms that a neurodivergent would get is very different from what a neurotypical would get. So it's very hard to discern. But yeah, I'd argue that from my point of view, the line is definitely how your work-life balance, like how well you can function in daily life when using it. And like how productive you are, what you get done. Do you do everything that you want to do in a day? It's just like, yeah, it's very dependent on just your schedule. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, what have you been finding with your weed use?
Yeah, honestly, I took a very long, not that long, like maybe a six or seven month break. And I found that the breaks definitely help, because on, and it's, for me, it was the breaks and how much I was using before, and also the kind of environment, the people you surround yourself with, that also, for me, I'm not sure about other people, that has a very big effect on how my experience is. Because, yeah, it's just, you need to be around people who don't stigmatize it, mm-hmm. or else it just manifests into, like, the experience. But I find that a lot of my usage has been really good. I'm very calm. I get my stuff done. My grades are great. Like, yeah, I can function as I need to function while using it, but it's just like a lot of the time I feel like I have an inner narrator, which is a very common thing for neurodivergence with ADHD, autism, stuff like that. And it's kind of can be critical at times. And then when I, you know, I get a little bit high, the narrator, it doesn't go away, but it's very chill. Like the self-criticism just, it's not there. And I feel like I can just relax, and it's just a great sensory experience overall. Like a lot of reasons why neurodivergents seek out, you know, weed and nicotine and stuff is because it's a sensory seeking thing as well. It makes you feel good. It calms down your mind, because honestly, we always exist in a very high space, essentially. Like, completely sober, it's said that neurodivergents always exist in a very high space where they're constantly thinking, constantly functioning. But then when they smoke a little bit of weed or nicotine and then they come down very low, they get grounded. And a lot of the stigma that comes with neurodivergents smoking weed every day, because it helps them relax, it helps them get grounded, why do I have to adhere to social norms about it when it helps me personally? With neurotypicals, it's the complete opposite of the neurodivergent experience. It goes from, you're constantly grounded, you're not constantly thinking, you're functioning quote-unquote normally, and then when you get high or drunk, it goes up, and then it kind of, your people are not used to experiencing a high space from constantly being down low. So it's, so that's why things like anger, depression come from that. Mm. It's also overuse as well, but it's just like you don't exist in this constant high space when, so adapting to it from a low space is very jarring. That's why that whole experience is very stigmatized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've always felt that like there's no such thing as a